so we can
First, I give my prayer to the Almighty that He should bestow upon me His wisdom, His knowledge. I should be worthy to convey the truth of the Almighty, of God, and it should be comprehensible, understood. It should go in the hearts of this worthy esteemed gathering. And so we should be able, together with God's help, sanctify God's name and bring peace to the world, do His will. God's name is Shalom, is peace. Amen. And of course I would like to thank the esteemed, distinguished Imam, who I had the pleasure and the honor of speaking very many times through the last few months. A good thing comes hard, they say, and this meeting didn't come easily, that I could say. So, you know, Sayyid Ilya, we really appreciate it. God should bless us to be able to sanctify God's name, accomplish His work among grow, the community should grow and do great things, people should all serve God properly, should be accomplished great things, God's help go further and further in God's work. Thank you so very much, and I thank the whole community, Zanub Center, and all the people who come here for giving of your time, your precious time. Everybody is busy, everybody has to steal time by us in our Torah. We said everything has good and has bad. Even things that are very bad, there's good things that you have to, that has a good side to it. Stealing is also a thing that has a good side to it. You have to steal time to do God's will a lot of times, which is, it's almost impossible to give up. We have children, we have so many things, and busy, and we're tired at night, and still to come and listen. So I'm extremely thankful and humbled that you've come to listen to what I'm going to give over. But of course it's not my message, it's a message of the Torah, of God's work, with God's help. So thank you, and God bless you all. Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Yeah. The issue which we're coming here is to a matter of education, of clarification, with God's help, inshallah, to people should understand in this time, this troubled time that we're living in, that there's so much strife, so much pain, so much suffering, so much hard feelings, mistrust between people. And as the good Imam called me here, that we should be able to, with God's help, really take away much of this confusion, take away this misunderstanding, and we should be able to work together for solutions. Many times I try to give an example. Somebody goes to a doctor, and he's suffering many times with a certain illness, rashes, and this problem, and it itches, he has coughs, he has all different things. And the doctor's not a very great doctor, so he doesn't know what to prescribe. So first he gives Tylenol, he gives antibiotic, he gives creams, cortisone, everything, and nothing works. Why? Because he doesn't know what the sickness is, so he doesn't know what the remedy is. In order to be able to give a remedy, we have to know what the sickness is, what is the problem. And that is, with God's help, what we're coming to discuss, to understand what is going on, what is this today, this tumult, the turmoil that is today. One of the issues which is the center of between our people, between Muslim people and Jewish people. Jewish people, as we know, and since we're children, we've studied, we're people of the book, we are required in our education, is that when a child starts speaking, the first thing is we teach them Torah. And our education system is all together, that we have separate boys and girls schools, and then we have the boys immediately spend the first half a day, they learn Torah, only Torah. Then the afternoon they study in certain schools, the mathematics and what's required, but the mainstay of the day is everything constantly studying the words of God, studying Torah. And that's what we hope, that for a person to grow up to serve God properly. And so this is what the Jewish people they know the history. Many of the religious Jewish people, they know where they study with the law books, but they study also different things of rabbis in different areas. And I don't know if I could say the majority of our rabbis, but maybe even we could say the majority of rabbis. In certain times in history, almost all the rabbis were living in Muslim countries. And till now, I mean, they were living in Muslim countries. So we knew that the Muslim country was a place that we were able to coexist. A Muslim country was a place where the Jewish people had many times a safe haven to escape to. The doors were opened. Hospitality of Arab Muslim people was always known as a mainstay. And we appreciate it. We know in our communities, we know as a child, we've grown up, and every child knows this, that we have to appreciate that. A person is obligated by God. It says when Moses was put, his sister put him in a basket in the water, and then afterwards, by the 10 plagues, they had to hit the water that it should turn into blood, and then afterwards, there was different. Moses didn't hit the water. And our rabbis say he didn't hit the water because he didn't want to pay bad with good. He was saved in the water. The Jewish people know that the Muslim communities were always the safe haven and place before there was United Nations, before there was any human rights groups to protect us. We could have been slaughtered, God forbid, but we weren't. I'm not saying always it was perfect in every Muslim country. We all know that there's different people, different religions, sometimes different feelings. We all serve one God. We have much close issues. But still in all, unfortunately, human beings are human beings, and sometimes there were problems. But as a general rule, the Jews always were able to exist, sometimes beautifully, perfectly, which have many, many stories to talk about. So we know to thank the Muslim community, and we are thankful for that. And on the other side of the coin, we are tremendously, constantly pained and hurt, humiliated, embarrassed by what is being done by our wayward brothers, by people who originally came from Jewish faith, and unfortunately they are doing things that are not religious. They are doing things that are opposed to what godliness is and religion is. And these people speak, unfortunately, like they use the Star of David. They call themselves Israel. They use Jewish names, Jewish symbols, and as if they're speaking in the name of God, in the name of Jewish religion. That is to us, besides the terrible tragedy that what they're doing, but they're also doing it in the name of us, so, which for us is very painful. And of course, we constantly appeal to people that we apologize for all what's being done. It's not possible to apologize. It doesn't go that simple. You know, you apologize, people die, and you can't. But we can only express our feelings of pain and solidarity and support. But now I would like to regress. Let's understand what we're talking about here. The issue. What I said is, what is the sickness? Let's, with God's help, try. It's such a big subject, really. We have over 50 years, 60 years, and even over 100 years since the concept of Zionism came about. So it's so hard in such a short time, but I pray to God he should give me the proper words, that we should be able to condense this, just to open a window that people should be able to, from there, further study and understand. It's just an opening with God's help. There's Judaism and Zionism. Are they one and the same? The world knows that Judaism and Zionism is the same. Jews, the state of Israel, it's all one. In truth, Judaism is a religion. Zionism is the diametric opposite. It's just the opposite. It's contradictory to what Judaism is. Judaism is spirituality, a promise the Jewish people said that they'll be subservient to God, follow the rules of the Torah. We have to emulate God. Just as God is compassionate, we must be compassionate. The requirement of being godly. Every human being has to be godly. It happens to be that according to the Jewish belief, Elijah the prophet, in one of the, it's called Tana Deve Elio, the books of Elijah the prophet, and other books, all Maimonides, with our law books, they all speak about that. Every human being is created by God. Every human being has to serve God, and he has to not kill, not steal, not commit adultery, idol worshipery, and be a righteous human being. And if he is a righteous human being, he will inherit the world to come. one doesn't have to be Jewish for that according to our Jewish faith. And every person is required to do that. And if he's righteous, male, female, slave, Elijah the prophet, it doesn't matter. Everybody will inherit the world to come if they're proper. Judaism just accepted a bond, a yoke, on Mount Sinai to do the 613 commandments of the Old Testament of the on Mount Sinai. And it says over there, God said to the Jewish people, if you will do that, you should be to me a kingdom, you should be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. In other words, they're accepting upon themselves an extra yoke, an extra responsibility. That is what Judaism was. When a child goes to school, the first thing is, when a child is born, they bless him that he should become a scholar. We don't bless him he should become a millionaire. We bless him he should become a scholar. we bless and he starts learning, and the whole issue the parents are concerned about, that he should grow up a scholar. Person that is a God-fearing person. And he's required, a Jewish youth is required to constantly study. Just for the sake of studying God's work. It's a requirement. Zionism started, is not thousands of years old, it's around 100 years old. Who started Zionism? Zionism was started by non-religious Jews as a general rule. Theodor Herzl. I brought with me writings of Theodor Herzl, who he detested openly, and spoke how he detested and abhorred religion. He's proudly said he's not circumcising his son, and he never circumcised his son. The covenant between Jews and God, I mean, it's just unbelievable. People don't know that. But this person detested religion. So what did he want? What was he out to do? He was out to transform in the Jewish people throughout the world this concept of Judaism, this religion, into a nationality, a simply base, materialistic thing. We should have a land. We shouldn't be looked down upon because we're a backward people, poor people, study with long coats. And this, when people, the educated intellectuals, laugh at us in the bars. No, we'll be proud. We'll become cultured, and we'll be a proud nation as other nations. And we'll show we can even have an Olympic team, the Maccabees, and all these things. We'll be great. We will have a strong army. We won't be anyway, in any manner, less than any other nation. So he wanted to simply transform the Jewish people from a religion, a base thing, a whole concept of religion, into a nationality, and to uproot religion from the Jewish people because he detested it. In fact, there's so many writings, this time won't allow all of it, but I have to just, he spoke about the Jews were suffering, this anti-Semitism things before Zionism came along, and had, there's a reason, unfortunately, for, you know, anger at the people, but there was plain anti-Semitism, which we believe is from God, to remind people that when something happens to a person, it's to remind him that he should not become cemented in materialism. He should remind himself, repent, and look at his deeds, be introspective, and see why is God punishing him, fast, the rabbis decrees fasts, and see why there's a decree against them. And that's the concept of always, we believe, punishment from God. Everything is for good, what God gives. So we have to study every time something happens, and not say that it's because we're weak, or because the nation wanted. So this is what, this Theodor Herzl didn't believe in all of that. So he said, Jews are suffering. That's not proper. He said, what we have to do is, and this is in his diaries, he said, a way to solve the problems of anti-Semitism is to speak to the head priest of Vienna, to get an appointment with the Pope, to make a mass conversion of all the Jews of Austria to Catholicism. It should be done on Sunday in the middle. He didn't just say it. He had thought about it. It should be done on Sunday in the middle of the day with music and pride, publicly. We are the last generation that hold on to the faith of our forefathers. The conversion should be in St. Stephen's Cathedral. This is ongoing. You know, like this, you wouldn't believe it. This is supposedly, you know, the leader of the great savings of Jewish people, Zionism. Anyway, so this is what Zionism is. Zionism is nothing that goes together with Judaism. It's on the contrary. It's contradictory to Judaism. The people who started it were people who hated religion. They had the concept. In other words, they wanted to simply, without a state, without a land, to uproot religion from the Jewish people because they detested it. And they weren't just satisfied enough with just they should go in their holes and their bars and do what they wanted. They felt, because Satan was behind this. This is the works of Satan. Because if not, who told them? Do what you want. Go where you want. Leave us alone. No, they wanted to take all the Jewish youth, everybody, bring along with them, pull them into what they're doing. That is what Zionism is. Why is it called Zionism? Because in order to have a nationality, you have to have a land. You have to have a place. So first, in their first congress, the meetings in the end of the 19th century, they wanted to go to Uganda. They had different, all different plans where to go, lush land, where they'll be able to build up the land. But then they realized that they'll have their followings from their sinners and their fellows, but they won't have the following of the masses of Jewish people. Because Jewish people, there's some people who agree with them, and most people won't agree with the new ideology. So they said, they came up with the idea that they'll go to Palestine. Palestine is a very poor land. It was a poor land. The Jewish community that was living in Palestine was a very poor community. We considered it all the time the Holy Land, and Jews throughout the generations, as individuals, would always go up there. The rabbis, if they would retire, they would take a few students and go up to live off the days in holiness. And they didn't go with, and nobody went there to become a rich man with aspirations of making some big business. The concept was they would live off the days, and the communities throughout Europe would support them. This was how it worked in Palestine. There would be charities, special charities, to support the Jews of Palestine, the Jews of the Holy Land. This was like one of the main charities throughout the world. So, but Zionists said, because we believe it's the Holy Land, the Jewish people, as a religion, we believe that that we yearn to return to Palestine. We believe, what is the Judaism? Like I said, the Judaism is that we accepted on Mount Sinai, we made a bond with God to keep, be a nation of priests. When God made this bond with us, he stipulated to us that you must be on a very high level of holiness, and then you will go into the land, and the land, if you will be holy, you'll be able to stay in this land. It's like God's garden, something of that nature. It says that, but if you won't, God forbid, the land will reject you as it has to the nations that were prior to you because they defiled the land. The verses, many verses in the Old Testament says, the God warned the Jewish people, do not sin because then the land should not reject you as it has, if you defile it, as it has done to the nations prior to you. So the Jewish people accepted this bond, accepted the yoke of the 613 commandments to be a holy people, and they went into the land. That was Judaism. We accepted the fact that that God warned us in the books of the prophets, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, or anybody, the books are open, everybody can read and study them. It says that the Jewish people warned many times that they're not on this level of holiness, and therefore they will be sent out of the land, they will be banished from the land, and that came about with the destruction of the temple around 2,000 years ago, and the Jews were dispersed to Babylon, and the Greek and the Roman exiles, and when they were sent out, the Jews were put under an oath by God, three oaths: do not return en masse back to the land. En masse meaning as large Jews return, in other words, like, because we were banished. It's like when a child is very bad, so the father puts him in the corner, he says, stay there for 10 minutes. And the child, after 5 minutes, decides he doesn't want to stand on the corner, so he says, oh, I'm good, and I love you, so I want to come back into that, so I love you. The father says, I know you love me, but you were bad, we warned you 10 times, now you have to stay there for another 5 minutes. Says, no, but I love you, and he comes in. Is he doing something right? No. So he could begin incurring the wrath of his father. It says in our teachings that God warned us expressly. He said, do not return en masse to the land. Do not rebel against any nation. A Jewish person has to be a loyal citizen in every nation where they're living. And three oaths. And the third oath is not try to bring about the redemption in any manner. You must accept that it's a banishment by God. You must accept, as the head of German Jewry said, Reb Shamshon Fuhr Hirsch, of blessed memory, over 200 years ago in Germany, said that God is perfect. So in the banishment is also a blessing, because we are dispersed amongst the world, and we're people of book that we should be studying Torah all the time, and we should be teaching people how to act. So they said there's good, and everything that God does is perfect. So that is the concept of exile. Now we hope and yearn, and in all our prayers, a Jewish person says, we say, because of our sins we were exiled. We always say this constantly. It's in our prayer books that everybody who's religious says. And we pray to God every day that the day should come that he should end the exile. What does that mean, the end of exile? We say, Ubo amim yachdav rava des Hashem, that the nations should come together, all of us, and we should all go up and serve God. We believe that there will come a day We don't know when. But one day God will make a metaphysical change in the world. There will be a change where all humanity will recognize one God, and we will all grow up as brothers and serve God. That is what we yearn and hope for. We don't hope for a state. We don't hope and yearn for some that we should be a strong, proud, you know, some leading nation there. That's not the concept of Judaism. On all our prayers, you open, you'll see the translation of a Jewish prayer at the end and the beginning of the prayer. God is great, and we pray that the day should come that God's name should be revealed and His glory should be revealed throughout the world. That's what a Jewish prayer is. Our accomplishment on this world should be to bring, to glorify God. That is what every human being has to do. What is the pinnacle of all of that would be when all the nations recognize one God. So that is what we hope and pray for, that our small service should bring the day when all humanity will come together and serve God. So that's what we pray for, the glorification of God. Till that day comes, when God will make the end of exile, we can't bring it. You can't shoot yourself out of a spiritual thing. I'm going to shoot people. What? God put me in. I'm going to shoot myself out of this exile. It's from God. It's a spirituality. We weren't sent out because we were physically weak. We were sent out because we weren't up to par. So the whole concept of returning, creating a state, it doesn't make sense according to Judaism. You can't do it. You're just rebelling against God, and it's not the will of the Jewish people. We never wanted that. We always, through 2,000 years of the Spanish Inquisition, of the Crusaders, and all that we've suffered with, together with Muslim people, went through, there was many times there were rich Jewish communities, and they asked the rabbis, maybe we should buy a piece of land. The rabbi said, patience. God is compassionate. God knows of the suffering. The minute that God sees the time is proper, he'll end exile and all humanity will go up and serve God. To do anything, to take steps, is ridiculous. You can't, and it's against God. It's a criminal sin. So that is what Judaism is. Exile, accepting exile, being loyal citizens, and only praying to God and hoping for the day when all humanity will serve God. And our prayer for the high holidays was just passed. It's constant. The main prayer is called the Shmona Esrei. Everybody says it. It's only about one issue, the glorification of God. That everybody should fear God. It doesn't speak about, in the Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't speak about, give me money, give me this. It doesn't speak about that at all. It's one thing. People should fear God. People should recognize God. And this is what it's all about. Zionism is just the opposite. Zionism came along, these people didn't recognize God. So they said, we want to make a new concept of nationality. Why should Jews suffer? God forbid, is not watching us. We have to protect ourselves. All this is blasphemy. All this is heresy. And they said, where should we go? To Uganda? Nobody will follow them. We'll go to Palestine. It's a very simple solution. Every Jew, whether he's ignorant or knowledgeable, yearns, and every day his prayer is that we should return. So they knew they can approach the Jewish communities and speak about Palestine, and they're going to open their ears, they're going to perk up their ears and say, hey, that sounds familiar. My grandparents, my father, Passover by the Seder, said, the coming year in Jerusalem we bless ourselves, the coming year in Jerusalem, and that will, people will listen and be attentive to what we say. So they came along with this concept of we'll go to Palestine. Palestine wasn't a good land, a dry land, problems, everything. But they had to take Palestine. So that is why Zion is Jerusalem. That's what a Zionism is. They decided to go to Palestine, not because they were religious. They didn't even try to hide the fact that they hated religion at the beginning. They were who they were. Look at the pictures of the Congress, the Jewish. They didn't cover their heads even then. They spoke blasphemy. But they went around the world telling people that we're the beginning of redemption. Eschalta de Geula, the beginning of God's redemption. And they knew that there's so many people who are ignorant around the world that they'll get backing. The rich people. So the religious Jewish community won't back them, but who cares? There's so many people who are not religious and who are rich. And that is what they did. And then they went to the other nations, to the Christians, and they went and they said, you also study the Bible. Support us. It says in the Bible that we have to. So that, and the Christians, they lived together in Europe. The Muslims were in the Middle East. There wasn't that many Muslims in European countries. So who did they, the Jewish people were living there, so they were able to go to the, approach the Christian leaders and say, give us the land. And they were able to, and they make deals with the leaders of the Western civilization. Now understand, according to Judaism, we are forbidden to have a state, to have our own piece of land, even 1 inch of land under Jewish sovereignty, even if it would be uninhabited land. Palestine would have been uninhabited. Not one Muslim, not one Christian, nobody living there. We are forbidden to have sovereignty because it's a decree of exile from God. It's as simple as that. Accepted, all Judaism accepted that. We understood, because of our sins we're in exile, not because we were physically weak. That is what Judaism is. But Zionism needed this country. They had a technical problem. They had a problem because it was inhabited by Palestinian people. But that was only a technical problem by them. It wasn't that they, because understand, you and a God-fearing people reckon with how is it going to affect other people, and you know, we have to fear, you're going to harm people, because there's a God, and everything gets, the morals of us is dictated by godliness, by what the Torah, what the God says. Zionism is an ideology that is really void of godliness. It's not in itself, it has nothing to do with religion. So they were able to sacrifice on the altar of Zionism, lives, suffering of people, anything goes. And that is what Zionism is. So there's two problems here. Taking the land in and of itself, going to make a state, is forbidden according to Judaism, and it compounds it because there were Palestinian people, and now you're killing, stealing, uprooting people, expelling them, oppressing them. This is all cardinal sins against Judaism, forbidden by Judaism, and like I mentioned before, these were people from countries, people who helped us. We were next door neighbors, we were the best of friends. It's tragic beyond words. So that's the difference between Zionism and Judaism. When you say Zionism, it's a political ideology created by godless people, and they're simply using the religion, they're waving the Bible to legitimize, to get the right to the land, to intimidate, that when anybody wants to speak up what they're going to do against the Palestinians, they say, you're an anti-Semite, you're anti-Jewish. You say, the Jewish state, they want you to say the Jewish state did this. The Jews did this. Oh, you hate the Jews. Right? That's what they want to hear. And that's why they constantly harp on the word the Jewish state, they use Jewish symbols. Do they keep kosher? They don't keep kosher. They do everything wrong. I grew up many different like pictures and stuff. You can see how they, till today, Jewish people get beaten constantly because they stand up for their religion in Palestine, and they get beaten, thrown into jails. The Zionists, I can go on and on about what they do to Jewish people over there. They how corrupt they are. There's a lot of rich, there's graveyards from thousands of years ago. Jewish people lived there, and we know that exactly this rabbi was exactly the year he died. So for them, the archaeologists, to dig up graves over there is terrific. They can study bones. They know the exact date. It's terrific. Where do you find a bone from 1,000 years ago and you know the exact date? So the archaeologists dig up graves there with impunity. The government supports them. And our Jewish brethren, God fearing, hears that they're digging up a grave. They run out there. They stand where they scoop up. They stand in the hole and they get beaten by the police. This goes on constantly. They do autopsies. The body is holy because it's a godliness. A person dies, God forbid. We have to have special people who run to the hospitals in the middle of the night when they hear somebody die, and you can't take your eyes off that dead body because he may be cut up immediately. They sell the parts. Not only do they need it for medical study, they sell. This is ongoing, constant demonstrations we have. I could go on and on because it's the Zionism in essence is a godless concept. I'm not going to harp on. I just want to open windows. You should understand what this is. Maybe the first martyr was a Jewish fellow that we know. His name was Dr. Dahan. In the 1927-1929, he came from Norway, Denmark. He was not practicing Jew, and he came and he decided to become a practicing Jew. He was a distinguished scholar. He was a diplomat. So he thought being a good Jew meant you move become a Zionist. That's the ultimate in being a good Jew. So he moved to Israel, Palestine at the time, and he became close with the Zionists, but then he was a very serious-minded person, so he saw that the religious community is anti-Zionist. The really true Jewish community was opposed to the Zionists, and there was really conflict. They were being harassed by the Zionists. So he went to the chief rabbi, Rabbi Zonnefeld, of blessed memory at the time, and he said, what's going on here? Explain. So he explained to him that there's a very big difference between Zionism and Judaism. So he said, how come your words are not known? Why isn't it known throughout the political world? He said, I will represent you. And he made the first meeting that was Rabbi Sonnenfeld with King Hussein, and that was the King Hussein of the Hejaz, the great-grandfather of King Hussein of Jordan. That was in 1924 he made this meeting. Because he said, we have to get the people understand. And Rabbi Sonnenfeld gave him a memorandum showing that we live in peace, and we have, you know, Judaism. He said, we have over a million members around the world from Agudah, he said, and we're all, you know, we're loyal to you. We have a very beautiful letter he sent. This was in 1924. This was the concept of Judaism. They said, we have nothing to do with Zionism. The Zionists saw this meeting. Immediately they murdered him. They killed him. They shot him in the streets in Jerusalem. That was maybe the first famous martyr, Dr. Dahan, his name was. And this is, from there, it's sad history about what they did. I have a letter here from the German general by World War I, where he had nothing to do with Judaism, with these conflicts with the Arabs, with Jews. He wrote about the Turkish war, you know, the Ottoman Empire, and he wrote about the maneuvering of the military in World War I. So the interesting issue, he said, is, and I have it quoted from his book, he said, it's interesting to note how 95% of the Jewish community is anti-Zionist, and they're being harassed by this fanatical little group of Zionists, and the Jewish community doesn't want them, because one of the things is they're creating hate between the Jews and the Arabs. This was in the beginning, this was by World War I. And I have that over here. And so it's this on and on. Till today, there's a large community of Jews who, just to go one step further, so you should get a continuation, in 1947, I'm skipping over that many years, was a year prior to the state being ratified in the United Nations. 1948, they made the state of Israel. It was ratified in the United Nations. In 1947, the United Nations sent a delegation to Palestine to ask the communities, do you want a Jewish state? So, of course, I'm sure the Muslims didn't say, yes, yeah, sure, I'm sure they didn't want it, and the Christians probably didn't either need it. But the Jewish community, there's a rabbi, an old man living in Williamsburg, New York, Brooklyn, New York, and he said he was there. He was a student of this Rabbi Dashinsky. Rabbi Sonnenfeld, who I mentioned before, had passed away. The next chief rabbi of the Jewish community was Rabbi Dashinsky of blessed memory. And the delegation came to him, and he said, I don't want a Jewish state. It's ridiculous. But he was ignored. So in 1947, November 1947, they heard that they're being ignored. They're going to create a state of Israel. So he sent a letter to the Secretary General of the United Nations, and this is in the documents of the United Nations. And he said, the Jews, to the Secretary General of the United Nations, Lake Success. The Jewish Orthodox community, called Eid HaCharet, this God-fearing community, comprising 60,000 souls, objects to the plea of including Jerusalem in the Jewish state, and or its residents becoming automatically citizens of the Jewish state. He saw that he's being ignored. They're going to make a state. He said, but at least I'm the rabbi here in Jerusalem. We object that you should include our community in the Jewish state. Our community demands that Jerusalem be an international zone under your protection, with full autonomy, its residents be free citizens of the international zone of Jerusalem. We beg of you not to take any action before receiving our memorandum, signed by Rabbi Dashinsky. This went on. This community of 60,000 people, thank God, was not slaughtered by World War II. So they just grew. We don't have family planning in the Orthodox Jewish community. Thank God we have large families. And they just grew and grew. And they're there. They're still there. And there's many people who came after World War II. These people are all don't recognize the state of Israel. And they're still true today, as we are, to the fact that it's forbidden for us to have a state. And it's illegitimate, it's blasphemy, and so forth. Where I live in New York, there's Williamsburg, where there's a large Jewish community. Right across from Manhattan, there's a Williamsburg Bridge. Maybe people were there. Right across, you go across, you'll see the most concentrated Jewish community, all very religious. You won't find one Israeli flag. They're all anti-Zionist. I can go on and on. There's hundreds of thousands of Jews, at least, around the world, who are anti-Zionist. But it's a very complicated issue. I'm going to soon get to the questions, so I don't want to take up all the time. But it's very complicated, because when the Zionists realized they won't get the backing of the Orthodox community, so what they did was they started, they're not stupid, that they're not. and they started. They took public relations and businesses, PR firms, and they have newspapers and magazines, and they kept on hammering away that the Arabs want to kill every Jew, putting fear in the hearts of Jews. That the Jews, that even if you said you're not Zionist, you don't support us with the concept of taking the state, but understand that if you're going to give back the land now to the Arabs, they're going to murder every Jew. So many Orthodox Jews, unfortunately, bought into this concept that you can't return land, not because they're Zionists. So when the Zionists make the parade on Fifth Avenue, you won't find the religious there as a general rule. They don't go. The very religious never. And in Israel, the ones who participate in the government voting, even the Shas, these are the right wings, but they don't go to the army. Almost all of them don't go to the army. Why don't they go to the army? The left, the non-religious, call them leeches. So you're taking money and you're not going to the army. We have to die for you. So they say, look, we didn't ask you to create a state. You create a state. We have to have representation now. Our Palestinians have to have representation. But they don't support the concept. So they don't have Israeli flags on their buildings. Still in all, our rabbis don't agree with them. When the state of Israel happened, there was a split between the Orthodox rabbis. Our rabbis said, if you're going to participate, you're going to take money from them, what's going to happen is you're going to become influenced by him. Because in the Torah it says, a judge takes money, even one penny. It says, Ki ha-shochet ma'aver einich ha-chomem ha-masayev tivet tzadikim. It's a verse in the Torah. It says, because if you take a bribe, it makes blind the eyes of the wise, and it twists the words of the righteous. Even one penny, even Moses, anybody will take one penny, then he's not trusted to be a judge. So if you're going to take money from the state of Israel, they warn them, what's going to happen is you're going to get influenced by them. So we warn them, but unfortunately these people said that we're dying from hunger, which they were dying from hunger, because the state of Israel took a stranglehold on the whole community, because they had the power, which is a whole long story how they did that, but they took all the charities under them, and you had to go to them for money, and the children died, their bellies swelled from hunger. We have people who are alive today who talk about, they used to cut pieces of bread, like, what happened? So these people said they have to have representation in the government. Unfortunately, that's how these organizations started, but not that the Zionists. So you have from the Orthodox community a spectrum of people, some who, not Zionists, but they, because of fear, false fear, they participate. Then there's our communities that are entirely anti-Zionist. And again, I have big pictures there. Which later anybody can look at on our site. But you can see that the demonstrations against the state of Israel to today, hundreds of thousands. We had the pictures are too small here to see, but you'll be able to see. I'll leave that. You see in Jerusalem. This is in New York. You can see the crowds and crowds of anti-Zionists. And if you read the signs, Israel has no right to Palestine. Israel Jews are not the same thing. Palestinian blood is not water. And I mean, you can see what. This is what Judaism is. People don't know that because the control of the media, not only they control the Jewish communities, but they intimidate anybody who stands up against them. If a politician stands up against them, there's AIPAC. And if you know AIPAC, it's everything, each one in and of itself, it could be interesting stories for hours. We go every year to when the AIPAC has a 3-day convention every year in Washington. Democrats, Republicans, the majority and the minority, everybody comes and bows down and gives an offering for Zionism to AIPAC. It's a fact. And if somebody dares to speak up too sympathetically for Palestinians, they're committing political suicide. Media, if somebody, first of all, they own a lot of the media, but even the ones that they don't own, but if they'll speak up against Zionism, then they're stained, and they're black, this guy's an anti-Semite, you can't listen to him, and they'll lose their job, and the paper will lose advertisements, so it's an ongoing system of how they control. We make our demonstrations, which I show you, we don't get covered. None of our demonstrations get covered. Almost entirely not. We had a demonstration of 50,000 people. This year we had 3 demonstrations. And on the press they said there was a problem with the traffic. There were traffic jams. They didn't say why. Or when the Rabbi Teitelbaum passed away, which was a follower of anti-Zionism. And there was 100,000 people going to his funeral. They didn't mention one word what he was, that he was, his main position was that he was anti-Zionist. That's all unfortunate. But again, this is just, I'm just touching upon these things. The oppression of Palestinians, of course, is required. I should be standing here and crying and talking about what we know is being done to the Palestinian people, Deir Yassin, and I mean all what happened from day one, not to the 67 borders. No, from the, when they came in at the beginning of the 20th century, the Zionists with their plan of taking over the land, the rules of the land, we know what was going on. But again, time doesn't permit, and that is maybe something which at least you can get the facts from other people, so I won't delve into that. The issue of the Holocaust. The Zionists, it's mind-boggling, which again, in the future with God's help, when you can study, you can hear, the Zionists were implicated. Clearly, they stood by and they thwarted efforts of saving Jews. In England, I have a letter here in the Parliament, and it was written, it's a fact, anybody could check it up, it was in the London Times, it was all over, and that the Parliament had a vote of 270 people, over 270 parliamentarians, the MPs, at 1942, the war was from 1938 to 1945, it was the middle of Jews being murdered. And England offered to save the Jews, to take the Jews into India, you know, the colonies. And the Zionists sent a letter to them. They said, you have to include Palestine. So we can't include Palestine. What's, you know, everything, by 42, there was this terrible, you know, fighting going on in Palestine. So the English, it was theirs. They couldn't send the Jews to Palestine. So they said, we can't. So then we don't want your favors. So they stopped. The whole effort was stopped. Imagine that. The Zionists knew. They saw Jews are being murdered wholesale. And they said, you have to include Palestine. What type of a human being could do such a thing? In 1938, and I have here a tape that just came out, a PBS was playing. It's called Sugihari. Maybe I have it in the other one. I'll take it out later. Sugihari. It's a PBS that just showed about how the Japanese ambassador saved the many Jews. He made false visas, just kept on writing visas. Very famous story. He saved a whole religious school called Mir Yeshiva. The Japanese, the beginning of the war, sent a messenger to one of the heads of Zionism in the United States, Stephen Wise. He called himself a rabbi. He wasn't a rabbi. He's reformed, not religious. They're ready to take in every single Jew without any visas, without any paperwork. Because they had a reason. They explained, they figured that the Jews, doctors, lawyers, this, that, they'll be able to build up Japan. And they wanted to take in every Jew. And he grabbed them by the neck and he threw them out. See, and this guy in the PBS, he just mentioned it. He said maybe because he felt that they'll be better to go to Palestine. You know, that's what he said. I mean, you know, he doesn't know the reason, but that's what that guy did. In my grandparents were killed in Auschwitz. My father comes from Hungary. In Hungary, was invaded by the Nazis in 1944. At that time, they were desperate. They were losing the war. It was clear they were losing the war. The rabbis, the Orthodox rabbis, approached through messenger Eichmann. You heard of Eichmann, who in the Nuremberg trials, he was one of the leaders. He was the ones who ran the murdering of Jews. He was approached, and they made a deal with him that he should stop killing Jews. They'll buy off the Jews. They'll buy them trucks for the Germans. Trucks, and they'll buy off all the Jews. 50 Jews, a truck or something. They had a whole deal. And they stopped killing Jews for a month or 2 month period in Auschwitz. The Zionists came, and the rabbis approached the Zionist organization because they had the money. They should supply the money because they couldn't dream that they wouldn't want to help in this effort. They sure will help you. Behind the backs, they stopped the saving of Jews. And there's books written called Perfidy from Ben Hecht about this. There was the cast in the trials. These are all facts. I'm not saying anything that's, you know, just hearsay or like the World Trade Center, did it. I'm telling facts that could be followed on, not things that, you know, you could think, did it happen, didn't it happen. These are all facts that's written. I'm going to quote, Chaim Weizmann was the first president of the State of Israel. And he, in 1938, and I'm quoting, this is a Zionist paper called the Jewish Press, and this was written in his books, and I know that I'm going to, maybe just another 5 minutes. Chaim Weizmann said like this, in 1938, Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish youth to come to us. We want only the educated to enter Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to stay where they are and face whatever fate awaits them. These millions of Jews are dust on the wheels of history, and they have to be blown away. We don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another low-grade ghetto. In other words, they want these Jews to die, not to come. They're supposedly the saviors. The Arabs are our enemies. And these are the saviors of Jews. Zionism, the state of Israel, the place that the Jews have to, the safe haven to run to, and that the Jews need it. And they were the ones who stood in the way of saving Jews. And they were implicated with helping, collaborating with the Nazis. I have much more, the time doesn't allow. But Eichmann himself spoke, in Life magazine, they had tapes that he spoke about how he collaborated with the Zionists. It's very interesting, the whole thing, unfortunately, it's tragic. The point is, just what you should understand, what Zionism is, what Judaism is. Why is it so important to understand all of this? Because, as I say, we have to understand how to have a remedy for without problems. Well, look what's going on between Jews and Muslims around the world. Unfortunately, my heart, I always am so impressed. There's no words to describe. You come to a Muslim community, people are friendly, people are nice. I mean, you can say, why should they be nice to Jews? If they hear day in and day out, the Jews, the Jewish state, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. I mean, they should, you know, I don't want to say, look at every Jew what they fulfill. And still in all, I find people are exceptionally nice. And not only I find, but other people tell. We can't thank you enough for that. But still in all, a human being is a human being. And there's a rift. A rift has been driven between Jews and Muslims. And we have to, the Muslim community has to know and understand, the Jewish community unfortunately also has to know, but to understand that this is not Judaism, this is not the Jewish religion, and it's not the mindset of the Jewish people around the world. There was many people who fell prey, especially after if by World War II, where all the leaders, the majority of the leaders of Jews were murdered, and the Zionists took control, so they influenced many Jews. But still in all, many Jews understand. To thank the Muslims, they feel with the suffering of the Palestinians. Just they can't go around talking, because I go up and I speak, my colleagues get beaten. My glasses are broken. I have to have stronger glasses, but I walk around with this because it's cracked. I was punched in the eye 2 years ago in a demonstration in New York. Maybe you've heard in Europe, two rabbis were beaten, and whoever speaks up against them, they take somebody like they did in Darius and other neighbors at the beginning of 1948. What did? They beat up one or two people, or more, I mean, whatever, and other people ran away. So they said, you ran away, you left your houses. Of course they ran away, they left their houses, because they were intimidated. They take an example, they take up somebody, and God forbid, they murder, they beat, and then other people are fearful. They look at, they say, we're anti-Zionists, we're not going to talk. Thank God, in the very concentrated Jewish communities, well, you go to any community, you have Chicago, you have Seattle, any place where there's a Jewish community, most of them go learning in Jerusalem or in New York by the Ivy League of Jewish Studies. So many of them, most of them are anti-Zionists. But when they come back, they'll never speak, because they know, when in New York, you know, we're insulated, we have a strong community, but you come out, the Zionists have power. People are fearful of talking. They're intimidated. In New York, we have large numbers. Even in New York, people are fearful. After every demonstration, tens of people lose their jobs. Because somebody who has a big business deal goes and calls the guy and says, you want to, our supermarket should do business with you? I saw one of your workers there. If you're not going to throw them out, we're going to boycott your store. I can go on and on with this. I'm not going to go up. But this is facts. Not only that, but think about it. The Muslim community around the world, in Western civilization, is vilified. Why? Because, like I mentioned earlier, Muslim people are new, relatively new in the Muslim in the Western world. So people say, could we live with these people? Are they good neighbors? Will they be good neighbors? Who are they? So they say, let's look at history. So who provides history? The Zionists provide history. And they provide history that the Jews were always murdered. There's an ingrained hate between Jews and Muslims. And it's two religions that you can't get along with a Muslim person. Is that true? That's taking history and turning it on its head. What is the truth? Ask anybody from an Arab country. Jews, I taped old Jews from Iraq. I taped Jews from, I was in Yemen. I went in the back hills of Yemen where they had tribal wars. 10 years ago I was there. They had tribal wars. And they were tribal wars. And everybody goes around with their knives and their guns. Children. And they would put garbage cans in the roads, and they would look into the car. I went without protection, basically. I mean, we went with a local guy, but not military. We went to and they stopped. They looked at the car. Oh, Jews! And they let me go further. You know, they weren't interested. It wasn't we weren't. And we walked in. The neighbors walked in, drank tea together. I have a letter here. How time doesn't allow, but the Zionists took out a bunch of Jews from Yemen originally in 1950s. They took out all the Jews by inciting. They put a fear. They put bombs. They were caught putting bombs in synagogues in Iraq. In Yemen, they killed Jews, and they said the Arabs are doing it. So the Jews ran away, and they died on the way in the desert. Unbelievable. They called it Operation Flying Carpet. It's a very sad history. But afterwards, the Jews lived in Yemen because it became closed for communists became closed for many years. Like 10, 15 years ago, they opened the door because they wanted to deal with America. So the Zionists came in, and they started taking out the remaining Jews. They promised them houses. They promised them gold. And then when they came to Israel, they